The scow bumped the tussock. The oarsmen bent their heads and fisted their brows. Helmsman did the same. When he gestured to Tim from the boat, indicating that he should board, long strands of green and brown swung back and forth from his scrawny arm. More of this growth hung on his cheeks and straggled from his chin. Even his nostrils seemed plugged with vegetable matter, so that he had to breathe through his mouth. Not mudmen at all, Tim thought, as he climbed into the boat. They're plant men, muties who are becoming a part of the swamp they live in. I say thank ye, Tim told Helmsman, and touched the side of his fist to his own forehead. Heil, Helmsman replied. His lips spread in a grin. The few teeth thus revealed were green, but the grin was no less charming for that. We are well met, Tim said. Heil, Helmsman repeated, and then they all took it up, making the swamp ring. Heil! 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 On shore, if ground that trembled and oozed at every step could be called shore, the tribe gathered around Tim. Their smell was earthy and enormous. Tim kept the foreshot in his hand, not because he intended to shoot or even threaten them with it, but because they so clearly wanted to see it. If any had reached out to actually touch it, he would have put it back in the bag, but none did. They grunted, they gestured, they made those chittering bird cries, but none of them spoke a word other than Heil that Tim could understand. Yet when Tim spoke to them, he had no doubt that he was understood. He counted at least 16, all men and all muties. As well as plant life, most were supporting fungoid growths that looked like the shelf mushrooms Tim sometimes saw growing on the blossy wood he'd hauled at the sawmill. They were also afflicted with boils and festering sores. A near certainty grew in Tim. Somewhere there might be women, a few, but there would be no children. This was a dying tribe. Soon the Fagonard would take them just as the bitch dragon had taken her sacrificial chunk of boar. In the meantime, though, they were looking at him in a way he also recognized from his days at the sawmill. It was the way he and the rest of the boys looked at the foreman when the last job had been done and the next not yet assigned. The Fagonard tribe thought he was a gunslinger. Ridiculous, he was only a kid, but there it was. And they were, at least for the time being, his to command. Easy enough for them, but Tim had never been a boss nor dreamed of being one. What did he want? If he asked them to take him back to the south end of the swamp, they would. He was sure of it. From there, he believed he could find his way to the Ironwood Trail, which would in turn take him back to Tree Village. Back home. That was the reasonable thing, and Tim knew it. But when he got back, his mother would still be blind. Even Big Kells's capture would not change that. He, Tim Ross, would have dared much to no gain. Even worse, the Covenant man might use his silver basin to watch him slink south, beaten. He'd laugh, probably with his wretched pixie sitting on his shoulder, laughing right along with him. As he considered this, he minded something the Widow Smack used to say in happier days when he was just a schoolboy whose biggest concern was to finish his chores before his da came back from the woods. The only stupid question, my cullies, is the one you don't ask. Speaking slowly and without much hope, Tim said, I'm on a quest to find Merlin, who is a great magician. I was told he has a house in the Endless Forest, but the man who told me so was a bastard, was a liar, was a cruel trickster who passed the time cozening children. Was untrustworthy, he finished. Have you of the Fagonard ever heard of this Merlin? He may wear a tall cap, the color of the sun. He expected headshakes or incomprehension. Instead, the members of the tribe moved away from him and formed a tight, jabbering circle. This went on for at least 10 minutes, and on several occasions the discussion grew quite warm. At last, they returned to where Tim waited. Crooked hands with sore rattled fingers pushed the erstwhile helmsman forward. This worthy was broad-shouldered and sternly built. Had he not grown up in the waterlogged poison bowl that was the Fagonard, he might have been considered handsome. His eyes were bright with intelligence. On his chest, above his right nipple, an enormous infected sore bulged and trembled. He raised a finger in a way Tim recognized. It was the Widow Smack's "attend me" gesture. Tim nodded and pointed the first two fingers of his right hand, the ones not holding the gun, at his eyes, as the widow had taught them. Helmsman, the tribe's best play actor, Tim surmised, nodded back, then stroked the air below the straggly growth of intermixed stubble and weed on his chin. Tim felt a stab of excitement. A beard? Yes, he has a beard. Helmsman next stroked the air above his head, closing his fist as he did so, indicating not just a tall cap but a tall conical cap. That's him! Tim actually laughed. Helmsman smiled, but Tim thought it a troubled smile. Several of the others jabbered and twittered. Helmsman motioned them quiet, then turned back to Tim. Before he could continue his dumb show, however, the sore above his nipple burst open in a spray of pus and blood. From it crawled a spider the size of a robin's egg. Helmsman grabbed it, crushed it, and tossed it aside. Then, as Tim watched with horrified fascination, he used one hand to push the wound wide. When the sides gaped like lips, he used his other hand to reach in and scoop out a slick mass of faintly throbbing eggs. He slatted these casually aside, ridding himself of them as a man might rid himself of a palm full of snot he has blown out of his nose on a cold morning. None of the others paid this any particular attention. They were waiting for the show to continue. With his sore attended to, Helmsman dropped to his hands and knees and began to make a series of predatory lunges this way and that, growling as he did so. He stopped and looked at Tim, who shook his head. He was also struggling with his stomach. These people had just saved his life, and he reckoned it would be very impolite to puke in front of them. "I don't understand that one, Si. Say sorry." Helmsman shrugged and got to his feet. The matted weeds growing from his chest were now beaded with blood. Again he made the beard and the tall conical cap. Again he dropped to the ground, snarling and making lunges. This time all the others joined him. The tribe briefly became a pack of dangerous animals, their laughter and obvious good cheer somewhat spoiling the illusion. Tim once more shook his head, feeling quite stupid. Helmsman did not look cheerful. He looked worried. He stood for a moment, hands on hips, thinking, then beckoned one of his fellow tribesmen forward. This one was tall, bald, and toothless. The two of them palavered at length. Then the tall man ran off, making great speed, even though his legs were so severely bent that he rocked from side to side like a skiff in a swell. Helmsman beckoned two others forward and spoke to them. They also ran off. Helmsman then dropped to his hands and knees and recommenced his fierce animal imitation. When he was done, he looked up at Tim with an expression that was close to pleading. "Is it a dog?" Tim ventured. At this, the remaining tribesmen laughed heartily. Helmsman got up and patted Tim on the shoulder with a six-fingered hand, as if to tell him not to take it to heart. "Just tell me one thing," Tim said. "Merlin, Si, is he real?" Helmsman considered this, then flung his arms skyward in an exaggerated "Dala" gesture. It was body language any tree villager would have recognized. Who knows?